As we said, Mary is going to be speaking on steps 4 and 5. Those are, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves and admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So Mary, I invite you up here to share your experience.
Howdy, y'all. Hey, Zoomers. Nice to see you all. And, yes. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Mary. And my sobriety date is January 2nd, 1997. And my home group is the Lovely Ladies, Friday night, 7:30 at 10th and Powell. So, tonight we are going to delve into steps 4 and 5. And we're going to particularly center them around the spiritual virtues that they both entail. So, step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Well, I'll be upfront and honest with you that when I first got here, this was one of those steps that I made a decision that there was no way that I ever needed to or was ever going to disclose anything about myself to anyone anyhow. And I made a pact with myself that I would just leave, no matter how friendly you were or how inviting you were. Even though I wanted a part of what you had, I was just going to bug out because, you know, this wasn't part of my agenda. That's, what is it said? Tell God your plans and he will laugh heartily. And he has for many years over that one. Because this step 4 and step 10 have become my true trusted companions, my go-to with any problem or disturbance. It's where I know that I have a solution as to why I'm having those adverse feelings of anger and resentment and fear, remorse, disappointment. Any of those, I can get past it. Change in life is inevitable, and it's also one of those things that scares me the most. Anybody else share that? Yeah, okay, we're on it. That's why it's understandable that the spiritual virtue of step 4 is courage. This step calls for us to look at and change the way we think, who we are, and the way we live. Nothing like asking for the whole meal deal, right? And no wonder that this takes such immense courage to walk into. Surprisingly, someone who has courage may not be fearless. Having, showing, or doing things with courage does not mean that fear is absent. It's about having the fear and doing the thing that scares us anyway. In step 4, we're to take an objective observation of our motives, our values, our beliefs, and especially our actions and how they affect others. We're endeavoring to see reality as it really is instead of the way we used to think that it was. Acting in spite of the fear and calling upon this virtue of moral courage means getting to live the way that God wants us to and to become the person he wants me to be. And step 4 helps us get there. Working step 4 is never an I project. We, a sponsor and myself, we work together to excavate the deep feelings and emotions that this inventory can produce and should produce. We don't tell our deepest, darkest secrets without having great feelings behind them. I've never finished a 4th step as the same person with the same personal perspectives as the person who began that process. For me, it has always changed. I've always been drastically changed and always for the better when I've worked a 4th step. As a quick recap, we know that we're powerless. that we're not effective on our own power. We found that in step one. We've struggled through a desperate and deliberate search for a relationship with the power that we know is deep down inside of us. We found that in steps two and three. And now we're going to work to remove the clouds that have been blocking the sunlight of the Spirit. We want to engage our higher power all the way through working all these steps. We're not in this alone. Even some of the ones that we're to do by ourselves, we're always walking with our higher power. In the big book about step three, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged and unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. I find it just wonderful that Bill W. asks us to consider ourselves the most important business on earth and to apply that inventory principle like a true businessman would to a company that he wants to be successful. Bill W. uses the word searching. We can know as fact-finding, fearless as to fact-facing, and moral to mean true. We're encouraged to take an inventory to find out the facts about ourselves and to have the courage to look at them. Then we can get rid of what's unsaleable and replace it with better thoughts and actions. My first fourth step after I had come back into the program was practically a novel. I mean, I had a notebook full of stuff, unsaleable inventory to be able to get rid of. In step four, there's a great discussion about our instincts, especially in the 12 and 12. And we know that we have instincts for a reason, and without them, there would be no survival. We need them to know safety, to get food, to reproduce, just to get along with others. But in our case, those instincts have been radically out of whack. As the 12 and 12 tells us about our instincts, powerfully, blindingly, many times subtly, they drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. Our desires for sex, for material and emotional security, and for an important place in society often tyrannize us. No human being, however good, is exempt from these troubles. Nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instincts. When that happens, our great natural assets, the instincts, have turned to physical and mental liabilities. I finally found the reason I was insane. And I was relieved to read that way back when. And I am wonderfully excited to share that with you now, because it truly was the core reasons why everything felt surreal and that I was totally out of control, because I really was. I imposed my out of whack instincts very wrongly upon everyone that I was around, with power playing, manipulation, threatening, demanding attention, dominating, my chronic need for prestige, and the list goes on. We need to adjust our instincts because they are useful and necessary when they're used properly. For our inventory, there are three major areas in our lives that we need to look at. All of the problems and the negative situations we encounter can be put under these headings. We're either mad about something, we're afraid of something or someone, or we've done something for which we feel ashamed or remorseful. For me, those resentments are the most painful and always the most plentiful. So I agree with the Big Book when it suggests that resentments are the number one offender as a source of spiritual disease. The definition, you know I love definitions, for resentment is bitter indignation at having been treated unfairly. That was me. Always unfairly. Another definition, though, that I liked equally well is anger held and ruminated about repeatedly, nursed and inflamed. And that was that obsessive mindset that I always had going. There was always a problem that kept me irritated. Resentment is not a thought or a memory of an anger. It is the current feeling of an active, lingering anger. Yes, there are a variety of methods and liability checklists for the step to do the fourth step out there. And I've been taught that as long as I am using one that abides with and alongside the Big Book, I can't go wrong. And so I'm most comfortable in taking my girls through the steps we took by Joe McHugh. So, this long list of people, problems, situations, I get to analyze them in a logical way. We have this wonderful set of pages here, and they get slotted into the separate pages for resentment, fear, harms, and sex conduct. All four of those are included always in this packet. And so we divide the page, a notebook page, into five columns. In column one, I list the who or the what was my problem. In column two, I describe what happened. In column three, I sort out my instincts in quite a bit of detail. And columns four and five is where the meat and the potatoes lie. Where these first three columns are facts about that resentment, fear, or harm. In the fourth column, in the Big Book, we're told, putting out of our minds the wrong others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I call this fourth column getting to the brass tacks. What in my actions or thoughts has kept this resentment, fear, or harm in action? Why is it still getting my attention? What am I doing to keep the ball rolling? Why is this problem still a problem for me? As long as I am consistently mentally replaying these resentments, fears, guilt, feelings, I'm turning my life over to others or other things and allowing that to dominate me. The fifth and final column is our character defects, where in the Big Book instructs, referring to our list again, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So, after we do the resentment page, we go on to the fear that has many facets. Definition of fear is being afraid of losing something we have or not getting something we want. The Big Book does offer us the suggestion that the answer to the question about the source of fear is again our tendency of self-reliance. Oh, I can take care of that. Oh, it didn't work out the way I thought it was supposed to work out. Even if we can name our fears, we describe and understand their source, we're powerless to actually remove them. So we pray for their removal. Again, we go back to our source. The big book tells us we ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. After resentment, fears, we go on to the harms we've caused others, and that also includes our sex conduct. So we ask in the first column, who did I hurt? Then, what did I do? The third column, we explore what part of the self has caused that trouble. We're looking at the instincts, my social, security, and sex instincts, plus our ambitions. What do we think we want to do for our future? The last two important columns, four, what did I create in others? Jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, anger, the need to retaliate. Another take on that column is, how am I continuing to perpetuate this issue that is constantly hurting me? I find the character defects, I call them the CDs, right girls, the CDs? They're somewhat vague, but very relatable to every single bad feeling and thought and action that I've ever had. There are so many other ways that I would describe my behavior in that column four, but somehow they all fall under either selfish, self-seeking, frightened, dishonest, or inconsiderate. All of them. I always try to troubleshoot to see if I can find one that doesn't answer any of those questions. And I'll be doggone, I have not been able to so far. And often, I have triggered all five of those character defects. The 12 and 12 sums that up with, by now the newcomer has probably arrived at the following conclusions: that his character defects, representing instincts gone astray, have been the primary cause of his drinking and his failure at life. That unless he's willing to work hard at the elimination of the worst of these defects, both sobriety and peace of mind will still elude him. I find that the key to this inventory is to develop a balanced perspective, taking responsibility without taking the blame. This inventory is not to hurt us worse than we've already hurt ourselves. And that is a point of balance that I have always struggled with. I was a middle child, and somehow I assumed the mantle of always being the peacemaker, no matter where I went, whether it was in my family, whether it was between my parents. I even was a peacemaker with my friends. And I believed that everyone depended on me to do that job. I took it on, and I'm not sure who assigned it to me, and I'm not sure why they assigned it to me, but I took it very seriously, and it brought me a lot of discomfort in my life. I remember reintroducing for the last time at what was then my home group, AM Sober, and I slimed down those stairs in the basement of that church, and I remember Dave Z was chairing, and he said, you're the most important person here today. And I'll tell you, man, I felt so less than, so shameful. And it was because I had tried so hard to keep coming back to this program, and I did. Every time I had to reintroduce, I always came back, but the shame was overwhelming. It was in the fourth column over and over again, because it was a way that I blamed myself. It was a form of self-pity. And it was because of my recurring relapses that I was a failure and a loser to myself. I was then judging myself on how others saw me and judged me, or how I thought. While I was working towards putting this together, I found an acronym for shame that described who I was back then. S-H-A-M-E. Self-hatred against my existence. And I read that and it stabbed me, because that's exactly how I felt. I was so less than. I had no self-confidence. I had no self-representation. I was like a body. There was nothing in there. I'm grateful that years worth of fourth and fifth steps have relieved me of that bondage of shame, and it turned self-pity and self-hatred into self-love and self-acceptance. That's a long way to come. So we've shared a lengthy and involved journey discussing those liabilities and how to excavate them. But how about the assets that we all do possess? That's the other side of that inventory sheet. Well, I gotta tell you, truth be told, I've always had a harder time finding what's good with me compared to what's not good with me, or what are my liabilities. And I'll also admit that it's a part of the fourth step that I have been negligent in bringing to my girls that I have sponsored over the years. I apologize, ladies. Bunch of you are here, bunch of you are here. It can be a very, very rewarding list. I find it extremely challenging to make a list of assets. But my challenge to you girls is, in the next week or so, call me. We're going to go over your list of assets. And you can think of it as giving me a gift, because I plan on calling my sponsor and giving that gift to her. So, we're going to move on to step five. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. The spiritual virtue of this step is integrity, meaning the quality of being complete or undivided, of being honest and having strong moral principles, or, in common speak, doing the right thing for the right reasons when no one else sees. The big book is very articulate as to why we're to admit our liabilities to another person. The best reason first, it reads, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think that the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took an inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty, in the sense we find it necessary, until they told someone else about their life story. And that was my story. I had not, even though I had done a fourth step in those 2 years that I was around this program, I had not gotten deep enough. I had not told my deepest, darkest of secrets in that fourth step. And I know that the pain was what I always could find excuses to pick up, but that pain that I was not good enough was what kept me out there. With working this step in only half measures, the 12 and 12 explains the pain we might endure. Even AA old timers, sober for years, often paid dearly for skimping this step. They will tell how they tried to carry the load alone, how much they suffered of irritability, anxiety, remorse, and depression, and how, unconsciously seeking relief, they would sometimes accuse even their best friends of the very character defects they themselves were trying to conceal. Well, since we're not very good judges of character, and most definitely not our own, we must confide in someone else, because God only knows what experts we are at self-deception. I love the description in the 12 and 12. If we have swept the searchlight of step 4 back and forth over our careers, and it has revealed in stark relief those experiences we'd rather not remember, if we have come to know how wrong thinking and action have hurt us and others, then the need to quit living by ourselves with those tormenting ghosts of yesterday gets more urgent than ever. We have to talk to somebody about them. So, as we've already walked through the process of writing our inventory concerning the people, places, and things in our life that we've struggled with, been hurt by, and caused pain to others, now we choose a safe person who we know will respect our privacy and our anonymity and will sit with us through the tears and the pain and the fear of hearing our life story. The healing, the magnificent healing that happens in step 5, happens in the telling and in the being heard, the art of communication, the speaking back and forth, the hearing from that person they understand. In addition, that other person is often able to point out patterns in our behavioral history that are informative, that we're absolutely blind to. We often find out also that we're not unique in our pain and our mistakes. And as the 12 and 12 tells us, when we are honest with another person, it confirms that we have been honest with ourselves and with God. We got it. That's what it takes. So we're also wanting to expose the exact nature of our wrongs. And what are they? We know our behavior occurred inside of ourselves. Those choices and actions derive from what we thought and then what we wanted to express. It's an inside job. So that column 4, we're back to this again, shows how I'm keeping that resentment, fear, and harm alive in myself. In column 5, my character defects, played out over and over again, are at the core of those resentments, fears, and harms, and they are the exact nature of our wrongs. That's why columns 4 and 5 are the meat and potatoes of our life stew. I thought about that only because I cooked stew this week. So, remember what they are. Selfish, self-seeking, frightened, inconsiderate, and dishonest. That's all that we have to look at. When we come clean about who we are and what we've done, we may feel raw, exposed, and vulnerable. That's an okay place to be. As Michelangelo was reported to have said, "Yeah, just chip away all the stone that doesn't look like David." The chipping away is not easy in this step, but the God of your understanding and that other safe human being, they're there to help keep you safe. I remember at the end of one of my fifth steps, my second sponsor, she lovingly pointed out to me when I was all done that I, Mary, was nowhere on my inventory. I had all these other people that I had resentments and fears and harms against. I was nowhere. And so she politely said, "Don't you have any resentments against yourself? And aren't you afraid of anything? Have you not harmed anybody with your addiction?" I'm not usually speechless, but I was. I was shocked that that was oblivious to me. I was truly to that truth. But it was just an indicator of how little I considered myself in my life. But after that, I'm always the first person on all those pages to look at. So we want to acknowledge the gifts that we receive when we share this most amazing transformative step with another. One of them is humility. And it's defined in the 12 and 12 as a clear recognition of what and who we are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. Also, we're receiving self-acceptance and self-forgiveness, which for me was a wonderful gift that I got after practicing over and over again in steps 4 and 5. My mom had been on every single one of my 4th, 5th, and 10th steps for years and years and years. I whittled away on my actions and thoughts about what a problem she was for me until I eventually proved to myself that she was not my problem. As Joe McHugh shares, and I know this to be the truth, if I got a problem, I want that problem to be me. And I remember that I did quite an involved 5th step with my current sponsor. And I could see her excitement growing. And we're at the end, and I'm like, yay. And she said, yay, your mother's nowhere on that step. Isn't that amazing? I was grateful, absolutely grateful and humbled in that hindsight, because that was just before I became my mother's primary caretaker. And so I could enter into that responsibility with her, not having the baggage that I had carried for so many years against that dear woman. Another important relationship in my life that I have chronicled for years in my 4th, 5th, and 10th steps is my angry reactions to my husband about, most of the times, absolutely inane situations. I would never consider speaking to a stranger in the rude and presumptive way that I talked to him. In my family of origin, respect and kindness were not always exhibited. And there were no apologies ever made for the nastiness and the explosive anger that I witnessed. I do not blame that for how I treat him today. But I know that down deep, on a level I'm just continuing to work with, I believed that it was some kind of acceptable behavior to treat someone disrespectfully. I want to share the recurring growth opportunity that I experienced with my husband. All right, we're going to do a quickie fourth here. So we're in the car together, usually late, going somewhere, and he's driving. A lot of my instincts have already been kicked by that situation, and we're going to walk through the last two columns of that 4th step. I have expectations that he's not driving as I would, nor is he taking the quickest route where we need to go. I obsess upon how he is driving, that I probably should be driving, and why are we always late for where we're going? I'm absolutely being judgmental as to how fast or slow he's going, and why is he right up on that bumper of the car in front of us? I'm not trusting God. And oh, I'm angry. I'm beginning to complain very loudly. So, right there I've accumulated expectations, obsession, judgment, lack of faith, and anger. And they translate into the CDs of column 5 as selfish and self-seeking. Why? Because my way is the best and the only way. Frightened, he's such a crazy driver and I'm going to die at his hands, and even God can't keep me safe. Inconsiderate, absolutely, to both him and myself. And dishonest, I, in those moments, firmly believe all those mistruths that I've just told myself about who he is and how he's driving, and that I am absolutely justified in my behavior of treating this person who I'm committed with my expectations, my attitude, and my downright miserable behavior. Working this issue out in the 4th, 5th, or 10th step consistently reminds me, consistently, because it still happens, that the problems that I have with his driving are entirely mine. With my sponsor's loving help, I am vigilant, and I am taking more responsibility in my impatience and my expectations of this person that I do dearly love. The reactions of mine are, I'm definitely a work in process. Talk about transformation of thought and attitude. I'm a work in progress. Step 5 prayer in the big book is, once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone and at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. This is where, in steps 4 and 5, that the recovery process of the program turns from taking stock to starting to build a new, healthier future. I believe that this process of inventory is all about getting to know ourselves, good and bad, right and wrong. It is a lifetime process that needs to be repeated often. And you'll continue to learn lots of interesting things about yourself, and you will get to see reality in a whole different way. I'm very grateful that I was courageous enough to do this step thoroughly then and every time since, because it's been a process that keeps on gifting me over and over again. Acting with integrity and courage is a great way to live. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mary.
Mary.
So now we have time for questions and answers. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and speak up. And if you're here in the room and you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand, then I'll bring you the microphone. So who wants to get us started?
Thanks, Mary. Carolyn, alcoholic. So you've referenced that you've done several fourth and fifth steps. I wondered what was the occasion that came about to prompt you to do the a subsequent fourth and fifth after I guess maybe it was the second one that you did.
Thanks. I try to work the steps every year. Sometimes I've pushed it to a year and a half, but I work diligently on my 10th steps, but it's surprising what kind of stuff can accumulate. That starting at the beginning, the powerlessness and the power greater than myself, and then going into step 4, that I can find that I do an abbreviated version of the steps, but I try to do them every single year. I don't need an excuse. I know how clear I feel and how relieved I feel after I have worked all of the steps. And it allows me then to put everything into perspective. You know, that's how this program is so amazing, is that, you know, everything is set up for all the right reasons. You know, why we don't start at 5 and 6 or 7. We start at the beginning and the ball rolls gently. And the ball used to fall from here to here. Now it kind of goes down a gentle path when I work these steps. So I don't need a reason. I do keep up with my 10th when life hits. When I have, my rule of thumb is, if I am bothered by something 3 or more times, I take it to my step journal for my 10th. But over the course of a year, I can learn a lot of things about myself. So a 4th and 5th are cleansing for me.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Who else has a question? Anyone on Zoom?
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bridget.
And I'm just wondering, do you think the ladies that you sponsor are getting it?
I know they're getting it, because if they aren't, I seem to hear from them. And then we know where to, what to work on.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you. This has been really well done and amazing. And, you know, as being one of your sponsees, I heard you talk many times about self-seeking, selfish, frightened, inconsiderate, and dishonest. And if I can just remember that those are such key elements that pretty much encompass a lot of the resentments and negativity. I want to thank you for just being concise with that, because I think it's very helpful doing a fourth step. Thank you.
Thanks, Bridget.
Hi, everyone. Gretchen, alcoholic. And if this was already asked while I was on my potty break, I apologize. But, so how do you guide people when they have been subject to different types of abuse that they have to put down on their fourth step and then share in their fifth? How do you work with them on that?
Well, abuse is one of those issues that they're not responsible for. And it's, for me, it's always been a kind of a cut to the chase that, you know, we have those rules in the big book that tell us to pray for those sick people. And I think that that is where I have worked with people like that, that, you know, there's nothing that they did, say, act, that ever would have justified any abuse of physical, sexual, you know, verbal abuse, you know. There's a fine line there, verbal abuse, but you know, that there is no amount of responsibility that that person has to take for any of the other types of abuse. And you know, we just cut to the chase, we pray for them, and we continue to move on. They'll be on our list to consistently pray for, but there is even no actions on amend or anything that'll need to. They just need to ask for God's loving guidance in how they're to feel and act through the processing of that abuse. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm John and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
You mentioned that it's easy to point out flaws in ourselves. So one of my issues is that it's very easy for me to criticize myself in the same way that it's easy for me to criticize everyone else. Now, on the other side, to take an inventory of assets without going overboard, I mean, taking like an ownership of the assets without taking total credit for it and turning it into a criticism of everyone else as to why you don't recognize all of my assets. So I guess with my question, I mean, with that as a preamble, my question is, what would be the definition of types of assets that are legitimate characteristics or virtues that one would strive to have, or that you know, one could take ownership of broadly?
Good question, John. Yeah. I was thinking about that today, because I was working with one of my girls just today, and suggested to her that, you know, that we need to look at the good that we do. And she gave me this 3 pages of assets that I've never seen this. I've never seen this document before. And, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my, there's got to have been 100 of them on there. But you know, I guess for myself, I just had a chat with my sponsor this week, and she litanized some of my virtues, and I was like, really? I don't know if I can handle taking those in or not. And you know, she said things like, confident and kind and caring and grateful. Those are what I see as virtues. Those are what I see as assets that I can put beside things that I'm not really very happy with myself about. The judgment, the obsession, the expectations, you know. Giving people a break. I'm always willing to give other people a break. I'm just not willing to give myself that break. So, you know, there's, we know what defines us, good and bad. It's just, I have to acknowledge that when I'm not willing to look at my assets, I got some ego involved somewhere because they're not perfect, and they can't be perfect. They are who I am, and I'm human, and I'm far from perfect. So, hope that's an answer for you there, John. You're welcome.
Any last questions? I think that does it, Mary.